sad and tawdry and small in comparison. Ahead, the jumbled lines of the Taeyong Arcology glowed, attempting the magic that Case had accomplished up north with her Cypress designs. Foreign-owned, built by Chinese solar investment cash, and probably standing a better chance of survival than anything the locals had created. Everything looked worse than the last time Angel had been here. More dilapidated, dust-covered businesses. More broken glass. More abandoned shopping plazas and strip malls. PetSmart, Parties to Go, Walmart, Ford dealerships. All standing empty, glass shattered and gutted. Women on the corners. Boys in tight pants waving down cars at intersections, leaning in, doing whatever they needed to get a little money, to buy a little water, to keep going for another day. If Angel wanted, he guessed he could pick someone up for the cost of a meal, a bath, maybe a chance to clean their clothes in his hotel tub. $10? 20 to tip? Ahead, the Hilton Six's red logo glowed on high, a beacon shining dimly through haze, calling from the cluster of towers and businesses that still functioned amid the implosion. High ground for the apocalypse, the place to flee when it came lapping at your doorstep. Angel eased into the Hilton's roundabout. The Tesla slipped through a curtain of jetted air designed to keep the dust away from the patrons. Handed the valet his key, walked through the doors. A blast of filtered AC hit him, an icy wall so clean and cold that he almost stopped short at the shock of it. Angel had to force himself to keep walking, to catalog the faces of the men and women around him. Relief agency workers, drilling speculators, borderland contractors with gold teeth, smiling, the men and women who prospered in the heart of disaster. The Hilton Six's interior was almost reverent in its silence. The muffled click of high heels, Italian leather wingtips, the low thrum of music coming from the bar on the far side of the atrium. But even here, the apocalypse was taking its toll. The central fountain had been turned off since he'd last stayed. Someone had propped a stuffed camel in the dry fountain. A sign hung around its neck. I'd rather drink tequila. A false ID and credit card later, Angel was inside his room, barricaded from the outside world by humidifiers and HEPA filters and argon-filled insulating glass. He stared down at the disaster of the city while local news blathered on the TV. Most of the city center was still intact. Phoenix rising, trying not to put the lie to itself. But just across the street, an entire office tower had gone dark since he'd last been in the city. Some real estate company just giving up on being able to get the occupancy it needed. Tired of paying the heating and cooling and police protection that would keep it from getting gutted. Inside the darkened tower, Angel spied the furtive flash of a few Petzl headlamps, people working through its interior, hunting raw materials. The rats of the apocalypse, chewing into the guts of development boosterism. He unlocked his phone and ran his finger over the screen a second time, cracking open SNWA's WattDev interface, a hidden and encrypted operating system within. He sent out an arrival message. Behind him, the TV switched to national news. A bunch of crazy-ass Colorado farmers were up on top of the Blue Mesa Dam with their guns out, threatening to do whatever the hell Colorado farmers threatened to do when they were shit out of luck. Angel changed the channel. Rio de Sangre says there could be more than 100 bodies. News anchors looking flushed and interested. Camera images of a bunch of corpses found out in the desert. Now I'm hearing it is more than 200. Image of a state cop, cowboy hat and a badge on his belt. All we know right now is that it was a husband and wife team. We don't know how many people they promised they could get across the border. He shrugged helplessly. We're still digging. A knock on the door. Angel pulled a cig and stepped behind the door, unlatched it, and let it open. Nobody entered. He stepped back, waiting. At last, a man slipped into the room, bit of a gut, but skinny in the legs and arms, older than when Angel had last seen him. Julio, holding a gun as well. "Boom," Angel whispered. Julio startled, then broke into a wide smile. He dropped his gun hand, and his shoulders slumped with relief.
"God damn, Ese, it's good to see you," he said. "God damn."
He shoved the pistol back into his coat and shut the door. He grabbed Angel in a bear hug.
"God damn, it's good to see you."
"I hear it's been rough," Angel said as they separated.
Julio blew out his breath.
"This place?"
He shook his head.
"You know when we worked together it was easy, right?"
He waved an Angel.
"I mean, look at you. You took a knife in the neck, but at least you knew exactly which rancher we pissed off."
"Down here? It ain't like that. Down here you get your throat cut because someone thinks you got a Lone Star flag on your belt buckle. It's fucking random."
"When I heard you were posted down here, I figured you had it nice and easy."
"It ain't all Texas hookers and hard currency. I mean, sure, Phoenix is almost decent if you got a condo in Tai Young. You know, nice splashing waterfall to drink espresso next to. Lots of Chinese office girls walking around in their short skirts."
He shook his head.
"But out in the dark zone, that place is a fucking mess. Every time I go out to check one of our safe houses, I think I'm gonna get me some plomo in the back of my skull."
"Phoenix not rising the way they say it is?"
Julio shot him a dark look. He went and started rummaging through the minibar.
"Phoenix down the tubes, more like. This place is circling the goddamn drain. If this all wasn't such a clusterfuck, I'd actually thank Voss for giving Case a reason to yank me back across the river."
"Voss?"
"Vosovich. Alexander Vosovich. Zoner I recruited. Motherfucker kicked over a whole mess of ants."
"What did you have him doing?"
Julio came up from the minibar with a Corona.
"The usual shit."
He pressed the bottle against his neck, savoring the chill.
"He was perfect, because he was a hydrologic engineer inside the Salt River Project. So I had him making friends, passing out money when people needed help with their Golden Mile gambling bills, shit like that. Sometimes he'd put me in touch with a new friend he made. We had people inside the CAP and Phoenix Water. Bureau of Reclamation. But I'm telling you, nothing he did was worth dying over."
Julio stopped using the bottle as an ice pack, started gesturing with it.
"I mean, maybe he digs up the SRP strategy for buying out some of their farmers, or he tabs on how much Arizona's paying to dry up some Indian tribes' water rights, that kind of thing. But then he got on something else."
He knelt and started rummaging in the fridge again, pulling out bottles of Five Star and Yang Ying and Corona.
"A guy inside Phoenix Water started feeling him out, saying he's got something Voss might want to buy, something valuable."
"And who was that?"
Julio came up from his casing of the fridge, made a face.
"Voss was cagey. Water lawyer was all he said. Wouldn't give me any more details."
"And you let him get away with that?"
"I just figured the pendejo was gonna put the squeeze on me. Add a broker fee, that kind of shit. Zoners are always looking for an angle. It's the fucking culture down here. They're corrupt as shit."
"So what was getting brokered?"
"Might not have been anything. Me, I'm started to think it was Arizona counterintelligence trolling us. Whole thing feels like a sting."
He came up with a can of Tecate, cracked the can, sipped, eyes closed, let out a sigh.
"Goddamn, that's good. Spend enough time out in the dark zone, you think a cold drink is a fucking mirage."
He glanced over at Angel.
"You want one?"
"I'm good."
"You sure?"
He jerked his head toward the fridge.
"They still got one more. After this, it's all Coronas and Chinese stuff."
"Do you think your guy Vosovich gave you up?"
Julio gave Angel a look. Well, since I've seen his morgue video, I'm pretty sure he gave up something.
And you think you're vulnerable?
If it had been anyone else, I wouldn't have been worried.
Julio shrugged.
Most of the people I use, I keep real arm's length. Anonymous drops, encrypted front emails, all that good stuff. But with Voss, shit.
He shook his head.
We've been working together for, like, almost 10 years.
So you're compromised.
People question Voss for sure. Fucker looks like one of those zoners that your desert dogs like to string up on the river for warnings. Fucking hamburger. He talked, and if they were asking the right questions, it's not just me and the crosshairs. He was helping me recruit, you understand?
How many people?
Are vulnerable? At least 20. Plus whoever he might have used who wasn't on my payroll. I feel bad for whoever gets handed this shitstorm. That motherfucker's going to be blind for years.
So you're out of here? Just like that?
Julio gave him a look. The cops ID'd my man by his feelings. That's how I even heard about him. His name pinged on the sniffers we installed on Phoenix PD servers. Couple teeth were pretty much all Voss had left.
Julio took another gulp from his beer can.
This place brings out the worst in people. Any chance your guy Vucevic was in some other business?
Angel asked.
Maybe narco? Cartel states are moving in. Maybe it didn't have anything to do with our thing.
All I know is I don't make bets on shit I don't know.
Julio gestured at Angel significantly with his beer.
And that, my friend, is why I'm still alive in this game.
Anyone else moving?
Anything shaking up? Some sign about who did him?
Nah, man.
He took another swallow.
It's quiet like a fucking mouse, no chatter at all. My guy is on the front page of the blood rags, looking like a pile of shit, and everything's fucking silent. It freaks me the fuck out.
Julio broke off, his gaze caught by images on the TV.
You see this shit?
He went over and turned up the sound. The TV flashed perp walk footage of the trafficking pair being brought out of their house in the burbs. A strange castle surrounded by barbed wire fences, with its own generators and cisterns. Camera interior images of the lavish life the husband and wife team had lived as they baited sad-sag Texans and zoners into making the run north.
That's a fuck ton of bodies, Julio said. Even for this hellhole. Threw off the odds on the Loteria big time. I thought I was betting big when I put 300 yuan on account over 150 for the week. Now I'm wishing I went higher.
Have you seen him yet?
Angel pressed.
Who, Voss?
Yeah, Vucevic,
Angel said, exasperated.
Your hamburger man.
You mean seen him, in the flesh?
Yeah.
Julio looked up from the TV.
I saw him on the police server. That was more than close enough for me.
Afraid?
Fuck yes, I'm afraid. Why you think I moved out of my sweet-ass condo in the Tai Yung in the middle of the night? If someone squeezed Voss like that, fuck knows how bad they'd squeeze me.
He broke off, seeing the expression on Angel's face.
Aw, shit.
He started shaking his head.
You seriously want to go see him?
Got to be thorough.
Julio made a face.
Smart people spend their time staying out of the morgue, just so you know.
Feelings, huh?
It's bad, Julio said.
I mean, Phoenix is one barbaric shithole, but I ain't seen nothing like this. You came out of Juarez.
Julio gulped the rest of his beer and crimped the can.
That's what scares the shit out of me. I already made it out of one apocalypse. I don't need another.
Chapter 10 Lucy forged through the morgue's jumbled crowds, shouting EMTs and Phoenix PD, FBI, and state troopers. Hysterical victims' families, morgue techs, and medical examiners.
It looked like the city of Phoenix had called up its entire overtime roster to process the corpses lining the hallways. Bodies were stacked on gurneys and dumped outside the morgue proper. Everywhere she looked, there were more bodies. Flashbulbs strobed in the corridors, journos working the blood rags, capturing the chaos. A new rush of bodies poured in, wheeled on stretchers, shoving Lucy aside. She flung out an arm against the wall, bridging a desiccated corpse that was barely covered by a sheet. The stink of rotten meat boiled up, mingling with the sweat and reek of the emergency workers. Lucy fought an urge to gag. "Lucy!" The shout echoed above the general din. Timo, skinny and grinning, waved to her as he clawed through the crowds, clutching his camera. A familiar face. A friendly face. Timo had been one of the first locals to take her under his wing when she'd come to Phoenix. Ray Torres had introduced them when Lucy asked about how the blood rags did their business, and she and Timo had formed a wary working relationship that eventually strengthened into something more. Now, when Lucy had a story assignment and needed stunningly executed art, she got Timo onto the project. When he had exclusive art that needed words and access to the big-name mags and newsfeeds, he called her. Symbiosis. Friendship. A bit of bedrock in the shifting sands of Phoenix's many disasters. Timo plunged between sobbing victims' families and grabbed Lucy's arm, dragging her deeper into the chaos.
"Didn't know you'd be covering this. Last time we talked, you said you were done chasing bodies."
"What the hell is going on?" she shouted. "You don't know? They found half of Texas buried out there in the desert. Bodies just keep coming."
The photographer showed her his camera, shoving aside his amulet for La Santa Muerte when it blocked the screen, thumbing through shots as people jostled around them.
"Take a look at these babies."
Photos of corpses being excavated, body after body after body.
"Coyotes were taking people's money and just burying them out there in the desert," Timo said. "Nobody knows how many they're going to find."
Lucy glanced around at the chaos, shocked. "I had no idea it was this big."
"I know, right? And I thought it was good when I first got tipped. This sucker's going viral," Timo gloated. "Half the world's sending journos in to cover this, and I got all the best pics. Paid for exclusives out of the dig. Cops aren't letting anyone else in except me. La Santa Muerte's paying off big for me this year."
He kissed his amulet.
"Skinny lady's taking care of her own."
He jostled Lucy.
"So, you want in? I got the art."
"Looks like you do."
"I'm serious, lady. My phone's off the hook. I'm super sexy to all the biggies right now, but I'll give you first crack. I'm not handing these over to some wet asshole who just jumped off a plane. Locals get first pick."
"Thanks. I'll let you know."
"What's up? There's something else you need here?"
"Don't worry about it. It's personal."
"Okay."
Timo looked doubtful.
"But call me about the art. We got things no one else is going to have for weeks."
He raised his voice as more EMTs came shoving through, pushing more bodies on gurneys, pressing them apart.
"We can blow this up."
"Don't worry, I'll call you."
"Don't wait."
She waved acknowledgement and pressed on through the crowds following the EMTs. She found a cop.
"Do you know where Christine Ma is?"
"What's your business?"
"I'm supposed to ID someone," she lied. "Christine called me down."
The cop looked around, harried.
"You better come back. This thing's blowing up."
"Don't worry about it." She pushed past him. "I'll find her."
The cop didn't even hear. He was plunging through the crowds, shouting,
"Sir! Sir, you can't touch evidence!"
as some old Texan howled and hugged a dirt-encrusted corpse. Lucy shoved her way farther down the corridor and into the chill of the morgue. More bodies.
every open space. Lucy recognized the medical examiner and waved. Christine Ma was gesturing sharply to some EMTs.
I don't have room for them, she was saying. I don't know who the idiot was who authorized all these bodies to be moved. They should have been left at the site.
Well, we can't take them back, an EMT was saying. Not unless someone's paying us for the return trip.
But I didn't authorize these.
Like I said, we'll take them back if you pay.
God damn it, who's in charge of this?
No one, Lucy realized. No one is in charge. Staring at the bodies and frantic emergency personnel, she felt as if the whole world was collapsing. It had been slow at first, but now it felt fast, too fast to get free. Lucy was having a hard time wrapping her head around the number of bodies she was seeing. She'd written enough stories about populations on the move to know that refugees numbered in the hundreds of thousands. And yet still, how had a single pair of predatory human traffickers managed to get their hands on so many? For all the statistics of people displaced by tornadoes and hurricanes and swamped coastlines, these piled corpses who had tried to buy their way north to places with water and jobs and hope struck Lucy more forcefully. Every time she thought she had hardened completely to human suffering, something like this hit her, and it was bigger and more overwhelming than the last time. Marooned in the chaos, she wrapped her arms around herself and suppressed a shiver.
It just keeps getting worse.
Christine was still shouting at the EMTs to take the bodies back, but they were walking away. It was as if high tide had poured into the morgue and left bodies as driftwood, piled haphazardly on every table, stacked on the floors. Christ, she could practically write the copy off dictation. Tima was right. This was big. She could probably sell exclusives to Fox and CNN. Google/New York Times. Supplement it with hits on her personal feed and hashtag Phoenix down the tubes, plus a direct to EPUB on Kindle Post. If she played it right, she might even be able to sign a book deal. She couldn't help but add up all the potential income options. She could sell the story 6 different ways and still have more plays. Timo was snapping pictures of Christine's altercation. More fodder for his blood rags. He caught sight of Lucy and gave her a thumbs up.
They say it's going to be a record.
Of course it was a record. Anything less wouldn't bring the rest of the journos flooding back to Phoenix. Everyone knew the place was dying, but slow death didn't attract attention. A record mass murder, on the other hand, that got American bureau chiefs salivating and news teams on the next plane out. It could keep her and Timo eating for months. Timo snapped pictures. Lucy watched, impressed at how fluidly he shoved himself into the most broken and intimate moments of people's lives. One minute, he was squatting with grieving Texas parents who had sent their daughter north to a better life. Now he was squeezing into the heart of a struggle between more EMTs dumping bodies and Christine as she fought for some measure of control. Nobody minded Timo. He was so familiar. He was practically family. In and out, snapping pictures. The man was Mercury. By tonight, the photos he shot would be spinning across the internet, and Anna would be on the phone, begging Lucy to come north again. Begging her to rethink the need to play voyeur in the increasing pull of this vortex.
I worry, Anna had said. That's all. I just worry.
This would make her worry more. This wasn't something that Lucy could just explain away as media sensationalization. It was too big. There were too many bodies. There was too much horror for even Anna, secure and safe up in lush green Vancouver, to miss. This was true apocalypse. The world after all the rules had stopped existing. And wasn't that why Jamie had decided he needed to risk everything? To get his share of the good stuff before it all fell apart? He'd been living in a horror, and he needed a way out. Everyone did. Timo jostled up beside her, breaking her train of thought. "Seriously, what are you looking for?" he asked. "Maybe I can help." "I was waiting for Christine." Timo snorted. "Come back next year." He held up his camera. "Check this one out." Showed her a screen of moldering bodies. "They got whole families in here. I mean, these people paid a fortune to cross into California. And this is where they ended up. You've got to be able to use this, right? Human interest angle, some kind of sob story." He thumbed through more pictures. "I got close-ups, too. Check that. You can still see where the wedding ring was." Another body rolled in. "Hey, guys, hold on for a sec." Timo got the EMTs to pause while he unzipped the body bag and shot a flashbulb. Another image of a rotten corpse. Long hair, but Lucy wasn't sure if it was a man or a woman. "Great, thanks." He zipped it up and snagged Lucy as she started to turn away. "You let me know, right?" "Sure, Timo. You're my first stop if I do a story." "Don't wait too long. People don't love a disaster for more than a week. We got to hit this hard while the page views are up." She clapped him on the shoulder and managed to snag Christine as she came back from her battle with the EMTs. "Lucy," she exclaimed, "are you here for this too?" "No," Lucy hesitated, then plunged on. "I wanted to see Jamie. James Sanderson." "The water department guy? The lawyer?" "Yeah." "You're not doing a story on him?" Christine looked concerned. "No, just background." Lucy made herself laugh. "I'm not crazy." Christine pursed her lips, staring around at the stacked bodies. Her eyes were bruised and sunken with exhaustion. "I have no idea where he ended up." She pulled out a tablet and penned through it, frowned, looked up. "You sure you want to see this?" Lucy almost laughed at the incongruity. They were surrounded by decayed bodies, more of them flowing in every minute, and the ME was worried about the sight of one more. "It's fine." Christine shrugged and led Lucy into another room. "He got lucky. He came in before we ran out of beds." She went to a gurney. "We're about to ship him out, though. We don't have the space to hold all of them. It's too many." That was the story, Lucy realized. That was the angle for the pitch to the big media buyers. Not that there were a thousand sob stories that Timo could document, but that Christine Ma could be overwhelmed. When Lucy first came to Phoenix, she'd been so stunned by the fragmenting city that some nights she thought she was going crazy. But when she met Christine, she'd realized that she could take it. Christine was never overwhelmed. Christine ran her morgue the way she'd run her combat medical unit in the Arctic. She was never overwhelmed. She was never frazzled. She was never broken. Now, though, Christine looked almost skeletal under the strain. "I think this is him," she hesitated, her fingers pinching the stained sheet. "He was tortured," she warned. Lucy gave her an irritated look. "I can handle it." She was wrong. Jamie's executioners had carved a story into his ruined flesh, and in the chill of the morgue, without the muffling veils of the raging storm and her scratched filter mask, his torture stood out. Intimate and nasty. Infinitely worse than Lucy remembered. She swallowed hard, fighting to keep her expression neutral. Christine pointed with a rubber-gloved hand. "Electrical burns on the genitals. Adrenaline injected into the body. Signs of trauma at the anus. Rape with blunt object. Probably a club of some kind." "A police baton?" Lucy asked. Christine caught the implication as soon as Lucy asked. The widening of the eyes, the fast covering blankness. Christine glanced furtively to where the cops were milling at the far side of the room with a new flood of bodies, and she glared at Lucy for speaking aloud what everybody whispered, that Phoenix's cops were thugs for hire. It could have been some sort of poker. She plunged on. He was probably killed several times, then revived. The adrenaline in his system points to revivification. The eyes were removed pre-mortem. Of the other body parts, only the hands and feet were removed pre-mortem. The legs and the rest happened after he was dead. It appears that there was some attempt to tourniquet the limbs and prolong life longer still. Lucy forced herself to breathe slowly, to take the information as it came. The room felt as if it were tilting under her feet. She gripped the gurney, steadying herself. Christine was completely dispassionate as she described the stages of Jamie's abuse. But it hadn't been dispassionate for Jamie. He would have been sobbing and blubbering and screaming and begging, snot running down his face, tears and spit. His voice would have been raw from screaming. Lucy leaned close, staring at his mangled face. He'd bitten off his own tongue. The blood was still in his teeth. She straightened, fighting the urge to throw up. It would have been frantic for quite some time, until finally Jamie's attackers lost the ability to reach him anymore. And that must have made them angry, because they'd pulled him back from his place in heaven or hell to have another run at him. And another after that. Christine could describe the stages of Jamie's disassembly, but that didn't begin to describe the horror that he had experienced as his attackers broke him apart. God, Jamie had been a fool. So pleased with himself and his plots, all his ideas of how he could make himself rich and get away with it. Did he have his things here? Lucy asked. The M.E. gave her a long look. Yeah, he wasn't robbed. Can I see? She hesitated. You knew him, didn't you? Lucy nodded. Yeah, I could tell. She sighed. Put on gloves. Lucy did, and Christine let her paw through the bag of Jamie's effects. His bloody clothes, his wallet. She opened it and flipped through. Found credit cards, a few yuan. Scraps of receipts. She looked them over. Food stall receipts. The kind of hand scraps that Mary Perry churro vendors would make out. Jamie always made sure he got reimbursed for his business expenses. But this was ridiculous. A couple of business cards. Salt River Project. Bureau of Indian Affairs. Bureau of Reclamation. The ephemera of his work. Looking through his credit cards, Lucy came up with a chip and pin Anon card. Gold laminated, with a bloody slash logo. Apocalypse Now. Lucy turned the card over. It was the kind that had stored value in it. You dumped cash into it via Bitcoin or other cryptocurrency, then used it without fear of being traced. Nice if you didn't want a financial trail. Nice if someone else was dumping money into it, too. An easy, anonymous way to be paid. She tapped the card against her palm, thinking. It bothered her, this card. It didn't fit with Jamie. He had more style. Bad way to die, someone said behind her. Lucy jumped at the voice, shoving the papers and the card back into Jamie's wallet. A pair of plain-clothed detectives were standing behind her, Hispanic men with thumbs in their belts, pulling their jackets back to show handguns and badges. One guy was short, with a bit of a gut, a trim goatee, and a knowing smirk. The other one was tall, serious, angular, and weathered. They were both looking at Jamie.
Damn, the short goateed one said. Looks like someone wanted this motherfucker to hurt for a while.
Can I help you?
Christine asked sharply. CID. The taller man flashed his badge and joined his partner in the examination, leaning close to study Jamie's face.
He hurt all right. Looks like he bit off his own tongue.
He glanced over at Lucy, dark eyes cold.
Those his things?
He plucked Jamie's wallet from her hand before she could answer.
The coyote killer's bodies are all over there, Christine said pointedly.
The serious cop straightened.
Not looking for old dug-up bodies, he said. Looking for nice fresh ones, like this.
He stared down at Jamie's corpse.
This one got a name?
James Sanderson, Christine said.
Huh.
He shrugged.
Not the one I want. We're looking for one named Bosevich.
He looked thoughtful.
Beat all to fuck like this one, though.
Lucy didn't like the way the cops held themselves, how their eyes went from Jamie's corpse to Christine and then to her. The short cop with the goatee had the tracery of what looked like a snake tattoo running down the back of his hand. The tall one had a scar on his face and neck, a pale, ragged thing as if someone had jammed a bottle into his throat and then dragged it down to his chest. The short one was pawing through Jamie's wallet as Christine led them to another body and pulled off a sheet.
Is this the one you want?
She asked. Curious, Lucy followed. The cop with the grin and the goatee still held Jamie's effects. Lucy desperately wanted to look at the receipts again. The club card. But she forgot all about it as soon as she saw the other body. They were connected. The two corpses could have been mirror images for all the difference their torture had taken.
Look at this, the short one said. Vosburger, Chihuahuan Apocalypse 3.0. Now you tell me this ain't all hell breaking loose.
The taller one snorted.
End of days for sure.
He jerked his head back toward Jamie's body.
And he's got a twin. Probably just a coincidence.
The goateed one joked.
Coincidences do happen, I hear.
They were both smiling, eyes boring in on Lucy now.
You know this one?
The scarred cop asked. He was pointing down at the new corpse, the one they'd called Vosevich. The dead man's ravaged body looked so much like Jamie's that the connection couldn't have been missed even by the stupidest cop. Lucy shook her head.
Never seen him.
The scarred man pointed at Jamie.
That one, though? That one's a friend of yours?
He plucked Jamie's wallet from his partner's hand and pulled Jamie's driver's license.
Who's this James Sanderson?
Says he's a legal associate, Phoenix Water, the short one said.
Least if that's his business card.
That right? The tall one asked Lucy.
That what Sanderson did? Water? Legal?
Lucy didn't like the way the cop was looking at her. He seemed to hold himself casually, but his question was pointed. His dark eyes had her pinned.
Hell if I know.
Lucy made herself pretend disinterest. He's just a swimmer to me. She jerked her thumb toward where Timo was shooting photos. We're with Rio de Sangre. Thought the body might be good enough to make the cover.
Huh. Didn't peg you for a vulture.
The scarred cop nodded toward Jamie and the new body.
You see any other kills like this lately? Tortured like these ones? Swimmers, maybe? Hanging off overpasses, that kind of thing?
Lucy shrugged.
Narcos do things like this sometimes.
She let the conversation roll along, pretending boredom, using everything Ray Torres had ever taught her about pushing aside cop interest. Timo over there has whole catalogs of pics if you want to take a look. He's probably got something like this.
I bet he does.
The cop turned and called to Christine, who had gone off to supervise more of the chaos.
Hey, this guy have any belongings?
He might have, Christine called back. If you can find them, they're all yours.
If you can find them,
the short one grumbled, scanning the chaos. He ambled back over to Jamie's corpse. Lucy was trying to figure out the connection between the two cops, and if there was something she could pry out of them. Vosevich, the cop had said. She wished she could ask for the spelling so she could start digging. She was sure it would tell her more about Jamie's death. Just this one time, a death wouldn't be a mystery. Unbidden, an image of Ray Torres rose in her mind, wagging a warning finger. Don't write about the bodies. You have any leads? She asked the cops. The pair exchanged amused glances. Bad guys, the goateed one said. Real bad guys. Can I quote you? Lucy shot back. Sure, you do that. The scarred one was looking at her in a way that made her suddenly uncertain. Her eyes were drawn to his scar, running up his neck to his jaw, disappearing down beneath his shirt, that ragged slash in the hard mahogany of his skin, puckered broken flesh, violence there. Tell me again about this man, he said, tapping the gurney where Jamie lay. What's your interest in him again? Lucy found her voice. Like I said, I was just looking for something bloody, for the rags. Right, he nodded. For the rags. Lucy had the sudden uneasy feeling that she had met him before. It's his eyes, she thought. There was something about the intensity of his watchfulness, dark and hard. Eyes that had seen too many horrors and held no illusions. He saw things the same way she did. Her mouth felt dry. Timo sometimes talked about people walking on your grave. If you were paying attention, he claimed you could feel death's wings flapping over your head, and that was the moment you needed to hightail it to a Santa Muerte shrine and make some big fucking offerings. If you were quick, the skinny lady could lay protection on you, if she liked you. If you made the right offerings. Lucy had laughed it off as zoner superstition, but now, suddenly, she believed. This man was death. I didn't get your name, he said. Lucy swallowed. She didn't want to give him her name. She wanted to blend into the walls. She wanted to run. I'm sure you got a name, he pressed, smiling. His head was cocked, studying her, like a crow eyeing carrion. His eyes were picking her apart, plucking at skin and flesh, muscles and tendons, flaying her wide. She'd been a fool to come to see Jamie, she realized. A fool to even consider tracing the story of her friend's death. You're not a cop. As soon as she said it, it seemed obvious. He wore a badge, but he wasn't a cop. A tight smile confirmed her guess, even as he said, No, you don't think so? She wondered if this was the man who had tortured Jamie, if he'd left Jamie and the other body in the morgue to draw her in. Cholobi gangs sometimes used that trick. They murdered someone, then waited for the victim's friends to come close, and then killed them, too. A sly trick. A favorite trick. A way to squeeze more death from a target, like wringing the last juice from a dry lime. Lucy took a step back, but the cop seized her arm. His fingers dug into her skin. He dragged her close, and his head dipped low. His lips brushed her ear. I don't believe you ever gave me your name. Lucy swallowed. Scanning for help in the morgue. Christine was nowhere to be seen. Timo as well. She pried his fingers off, made herself glare at him. You're way out of line. You think? Back off, or I'll bring every real cop down on your head. She guessed she had a 50-50 chance of convincing bystanders that he was an imposter. If Christine had been in the room, it would have been different. Lucy scanned the room again, looking for the ME. Where was she? The guy with the goatee and the tattoo on his arm ambled over.
You got something?
He reached to his belt, pulling handcuffs.
She got a lead for us?
The scarred man glanced at his companion, then back to Lucy. To Lucy's surprise, he let her go.
Nah, he said. Nothing here, just a blood rag girl who don't know shit.
He glanced over at her, warning in his dark eyes.
Blood rag journals don't know shit, ain't that right?
It took Lucy a second to find her voice.
Right,
she whispered.
So go on.
He jerked his head toward the door.
Beat it. Go vulture somewhere else.
Lucy didn't wait for the scarred man to repeat himself. She fled. Chapter 11. Angel watched the blood rag journal go. Something about her wasn't right. But he hadn't liked the way Julio zeroed in on their conversation. With Julio, there was a decent chance that anyone he questioned would end up worse for wear. So Angel had let her go. And now he regretted it.
I'm getting soft.
Hey! Julio gripped his elbow.
We got company, cabrón.
A couple guys were pushing through the crowds, jostling EMTs, showing badges. State cops, from the look.
You know them?
Callies.
Julio turned away, keeping his back to them. He murmured,
if they see my ass, they'll know me for sure. Phoenix is too small a town for this shit.
Angel gave them a once-over. They had the look, he decided. Where Catherine Case recruited her people from prisons and desperation, California had its own processes and spent its vastly larger pool of money in different ways. The pair threading their way between the gurneys had the clean-cut look of rich Stanford graduates. No visible tats, hair trimmed just right, real overachievers.
You sure they're Callies? Maybe they're real CID.
Julio elbowed Angel impatiently.
Hell yes, I'm sure. I got cams on Ibis and those guys are in and out of the headquarters all the time.
That company might as well be a Cali embassy.
Julio was already scanning the exits.
I knew I shouldn't have agreed to come down here with you.
Calm down, Ese. Let's see what they do. Maybe we'll see us something interesting.
Fuck you and your essay bullshit.
Julio's face was a death mask of fear.
10 to 1, those motherfuckers have badges that actually check out. If they want, they really could arrest us. Start running background checks on our asses. You want that?
You serious? They can do that shit?
Callies are way ahead of us on everything. You're running with the big dogs down here, Ese.
Julio emphasized the final word, mocking. He tugged Angel's sleeve.
Now will you come on?
Julio had lost it, Angel decided. Time was, the man standing next to him would have let a rancher put a shotgun in his mouth and wouldn't blink. Julio would tell that redneck and his shotgun that Vegas was putting a call on his water and he could kiss it goodbye. No fucking fear. Julio'd just hand over the papers and wait to get his brains blasted out the back of his head. Now a couple Callies had the poor bastard jumping out of his skin.
Do what you feel, Angel said.
I think I'm going to linger, see what our friends get up to.
Julio hesitated, clearly torn between his urge to run and his desire to keep Angel's respect.
It's your funeral,
he muttered, and then he was off, squeezing through the crowds, fleeing the scene. Angel kept wandering among the bodies, occasionally lifting a sheet, pretending to do official business while keeping an eye on the Callies, who were busy making their own tour of the dead. Despite what Julio claimed, they looked a hell of a lot like real CID to Angel. It would make sense that CID would be here, given that Texans were stacked in the morgue like cordwood. Even Arizona had to give a shit once in a while, if only to show the tourists that the state wasn't deliberately aiming to become the next poster child for ethnic cleansing. The blood-rag photographer was still snapping pictures, his flash going off like a bomb. Angel watched the guy work the bodies, fluid and professional. The man's presence reminded him of the journalist who had fled. Something had been off about her. So why'd I let her go? Still keeping his eyes on the Callies, Angel moved to join the photographer. The man was trying to get an angle on a corpse, holding up a gurney sheet as he took the shot, one-handed. Angel plucked up the sheet and held it for him. Looks like business is good. The photographer nodded at Angel, grateful, fiddled with his camera settings. Oh man, you wouldn't believe it. He sighted through the viewfinder. Could you hold it up a little higher? Thanks. He snapped pictures. I want to get her missing teeth. They pried all the gold out, but... Angel obligingly tugged the sheet into the position. Say, he said, you had a friend here, lady working the blood rags with you? Who, you mean Lucy? The photographer took another shot, stepped back, considering the angles. She's not blood rag. Woman's got Pulitzers. No shit. Angel kicked himself for letting her go. Guess I should have known she was good. Ask smart questions, you know? Yeah. The photographer nodded, distracted, still focused on shooting. I was supposed to give her some background, but... Angel waved at the chaos around them. I forgot to get her name and number with all this shit coming down. You can just Google her, Lucy Monroe. The photographer rattled off her phone number from memory, not pausing as he took shots. Can you lift that higher? More commotion came from the hallway. They both turned, expecting another surge of excavated corpses, but instead it was families. A whole flood of people, not just Texans either. Locals, it looked like. A rainbow of skin colors. Black and white and brown and yellow. All united in their loss. All pouring past the cops, who were losing control of the situation. People babbling in Spanish, English, and Dallas drawl. And all sounding pretty much the same in mourning. Oh man, this is going to be sweet, the photographer said. He dove into the action. Angel faded up against a wall, keeping an eye on the Callies as they made their rounds. Lucy Monroe, winner of Pulitzers. The Callies paused at James Sanderson's body and called out to the Chinese lady who ran the morgue. Two clean-cut guys doing the exact same routine Angel and Julio had pulled just a few minutes before. This ought to be interesting. The M.E. was gesturing, arguing with the Callies. They showed her badges, and now she was turning, her whole demeanor changing as she scanned the mayhem. She pointed, picking Angel out. Thanks a lot, lady. Angel smirked, tipped an imaginary cowboy hat in the Callie's direction. Too slow, he mouthed to them. Of course, they went for their guns. But by then, Angel was plunging into the crowd of grieving families. As he bailed, he casually tipped a gurney, double-stacked with bodies, sending corpses tumbling behind him. The Callies went sprawling in the mess, and the families lost their shit, seeing their loved ones dumped on the ground. They went after the Callies, screaming blood and vengeance. Angel grabbed a nearby cop and flashed his badge. Get those idiots out of here. This is a crime scene, goddammit. He kept moving, threading the crowds before the Callies could get themselves untangled from the raging families and the guards. They were good. One of them managed to get past the cops. Angel kept forging through the crowds, fighting against the incoming flow of bodies, families, and medtechs. He yanked a sheet off a gurney as he passed, leaving another dead Texan exposed, then cut left into a side hall. The Callie came around the corner, hot on Angel's trail. Angel threw the gurney sheet over the man's head. He yelped,
but Angel yanked him close, slamming his elbow into the man's nose. He caught the Callie's gun as it came up and smashed it against the wall, knocking it free. He spun the man about, put him in a headlock, and started dragging him down the passage. The man kept thrashing, yelling through the muffling sheet. "Police business!" Angel shouted as people stared. He hit the man again and got him in a chokehold. A few seconds later, the man went limp. Angel flipped him over and cuffed him for the benefit of the watching crowd, then dragged him farther down the hall, out of the mayhem. He shoved the man under a gurney and riffled the man's badges and wallet, then draped the sheet over him. He returned to the main hall, looking for signs of the guy's partner. The other Callie was still tangled up with the cops and families, all of them pointing fingers at one another, pissed off that someone's kid had come apart in the chaos. Angel ducked his head low and pushed out through the steel doors, into the heat and bustle of cops and ambulances and Texas refugees. Arizona sunshine blazed down, turning the blacktop sticky. Angel jammed his way through the press, half expecting pursuit, but seeing none. He picked up Julio in the parking lot. The man looked like he was about to piss himself from anxiety. "You were right," Angel said, tossing him the wallet as he climbed into Julio's truck. "They were Callies." Julio caught the flying billfold against his chest.
"Chinga tu madre, I told you that.
They zeroed right in on Vucevic and that other debtor."
"Fantastic. You're a real Sherlock Holmes."
Julio powered up his truck, kicking the AC to full.
"Can we please get the fuck out of here?"
"Yeah, let's roll." Angel strapped his seatbelt. "I think I want to check on that journal next."
"The blood rag lady?"
"Not just blood rags, apparently. Real journal. Pretty sure she knew that other debtor who was cut up like Voss."
"The water lawyer?"
"Yeah. Since the lawyer's missing his tongue, let's see if she talks any better."
"Gotta find her first."
Angel laughed as Julio pulled out of the police department's lot.
"Journals are easy to find. They like attention."
Julio steered around piles of dust that had been pushed aside by street cleaning crews. They headed downtown, Julio's truck bouncing on the cracked concrete of the highway.
"Not like us," he said.
"No."
Angel watched the hollowed-out city passing outside his windows.
"Journals, it's like they got a death wish."
Julio changed lanes, gunning his truck past a couple on a scooter, full head dust masks and helmets making them look like the shock troops in Fallout 9.
"That was a hell of a lot of bodies back there," Julio said.
"So?"
"Think I'm gonna put some more money on the loteria. They ain't anywhere near done digging."
"Is that what you spend your time doing down here?"
"Don't laugh. Payout is sweet. Crypto cash so no one can track it. Tax-free profit, so?"
Julio waited, his expression expectant.
"So what?"
"So you want to go in on it with me? There had to be at least 100 bodies in the halls. Plus you got your regular death fall all over the city. I mean, we got a chance to really skew the numbers here."
"Didn't your mother ever tell you nothing comes free?"
"Shit," Julio laughed. "It's the Texans who do all the paying around here."
Chapter 12. Maria heard the hyenas long before she saw them. Their giggles rose and echoed, chittering over the abandoned subdivision. The vet had claimed an entire neighborhood, turning it into his own gated community, stretching a double barrier of chain-link fencing topped by concertina wire around the stuccoed homes and Spanish tile roofs.
"I'm going to die," she thought.
And yet she kept walking as the chatter of the hyenas became a chorus. The animal noises resolved themselves into animal shapes, surreal loping monsters behind chain link, running in the no man's land between the two fences. They peered through at her,
yipping, showing teeth. All matted hair and swaying heads, loping beside her,